This week on A Brand New Dob, I am likely to rant about a Delaware daycare. I'll talk toddlers and tiaras, as well as a link between antibiotics and obesity. All that and a whole lot more await you right around the corner on Daddy on Board 101. Welcome, parents, winking, blinking, and nodding off in front of the computer, to Daddy on Board 100. I am your host, Lightning Mike Quackenbush. I am a parent podcaster and, yes, a professional wrestler as well. Daddy on Board is brought to you this week by Cobra. No longer manufacturing the Hiss Tank or Water Moccasin PT Boat. Instead, their innovations are designed to make your life easier. The Cobra Eye Radar protects you from driving hazards and keeps you safe and alert. Read all about it at Cobra.com. And also by Drobo. Cutting-edge storage solutions for your home, your office, and if you're like me, your home office. Pre-order the portable Drobo Mini right now over at Drobo.com. Before I dive into this week's stories, I just wanted to take a brief moment to extend my thanks to you, the loyal Dob Bobbers out there. Before an appearance this past weekend in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, I got to meet some of you in person. I got to meet some more of you after the Chikara Wrestling event in Indianapolis, Indiana on Saturday night. And I want to thank you, not just those of you that come up to meet me in person, but those that email or tweet as well, especially your congratulations as it relates to this podcast, now entering into its second 100 episodes, and we're about 99 away from completing that now. Belated thanks as well to my departed co-host, that is to say departed from this program, but still alive, Clayton Morris, who began Daddy on Board with me about 101 weeks ago. He is sorely missed here on the program, mostly by the female audience. Those of you that have left 5-star reviews for me in iTunes, I'm very grateful for the way in which you've helped spread the word. And those of you that just tell friends or otherwise use word of mouth to help inform people about this little podcast of mine, I'm very, very grateful for your ongoing support and your interaction and everything else as it relates to the continued success of Daddy on Board. This is not the only parenting-centric podcast on the Grizzly Productions Network. If you go over to grizzlyproductions.tv, you will find Mommy Beta, which features my trending show co-hostess Natalie Morris, as well as a cabal of others discussing all things mommy over there. Also, potentially relevant to your parenting experience, is On the Spectrum, the Autism Show, hosted by Jen and Don Wade, for information pertaining to all manner of things on the spectrum. If you haven't checked them out, won't you take a moment and do so? You might like what you hear. All right, without further ado, I've got a very important story for you about the correlation between antibiotics and obesity in very young children. This story was in the news quite a bit in the past week, give or take. It was on Good Morning America, among other outlets. You might be surprised to learn that giving your baby antibiotics too early in life will increase their chances of being overweight in childhood. Specifically, infants that get exposed to antibiotics during the first 6 months of their lives end up being 22% more likely to be overweight between the ages of 10 months and 3 years. Although, the study goes on to mention, their weight does tend to return to average before the age of 7. This is all according to a brand new study that was published this past week in, get ready, the International Journal of Obesity. It seems like every week I have a story from another crazy journal like this. Can't we get all the journals together into one compendium so that all the news is there? How often does the International Journal of Obesity even publish? I can't help but wonder. I know it's like a big thing, right? An obesity epidemic. Does it need its own journal? And I wonder how that plays, like, no offense, but like in countries where there are kids that are starving, the International Journal, couldn't this be like the Americans are fat? That's what it should be named. I'm getting off track here. Anyway, this whole effect on a child's body mass appears to be dependent on the timing of the antibiotics. Exposure to antibiotics that come a little later in childhood, that is after they are 6 months old, is not associated with increased body mass. Researchers say that the reason for this weight gain could be that antibiotics at this tender age may change the delicate balance of bacteria in infants' digestive tracts. This was the result of quite a bit of research that was done with over 11,000 children. So, important information there about exposure to antibiotics for your very, very young one. Here's one of those head-scratcher-type stories, and it makes me want to say, come on, Oklahoma, which I want to say a lot. A 5-year-old boy had to turn his T-shirt inside out. Yeah. Why? Because it violated the Oklahoma City Public School dress code to support Michigan. He couldn't wear a Michigan football shirt. According to this dress code, students are only allowed to wear Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, or apparel from another Oklahoma State school. All others constitute a violation of the dress code. This young boy's mother really put it best. They should really worry about academics, she said. Exactly. You are 100% correct, Cooper Barton's mother. This dress code also prohibits certain types of professional apparel. I'm not exactly certain what that means, but the reason for this is that they saw it as a step toward ridding their schools of gangs and gang apparel. I don't think that that's what supporting Michigan football is about, but I do think this whole story is kind of ridiculous. Upside to this, everyone else thinks it's ridiculous too, and consequently, this school district intends to revise their dress code policy, which is great. Because that rule is dumb. A story that has sparked a lot of outrage, including my own, has circulated here thanks to the local CBS affiliate, as this hits home for me. Dover, Delaware is less than an hour from where I reside, and it was in Dover, Delaware that three daycare employees have been accused and were arrested of encouraging toddlers to fight one another. Get ready, I'll give you all the details so you know exactly what's what. Three daycare employees were arrested this past Monday for allegedly watching and encouraging toddlers to fight one another. They were then released the next day after posting bond. These three employees worked for the Hands of Our Future Daycare in Dover, Delaware. They were arrested after a cell phone video shot in March of 2012 showed employees watching and encouraging 2 3-year-olds to fight one another. The accused are as follows: Tiana Harris, age 19, Lisa Parker, age 47, and Estefania Myers, age 21, and they've been charged with assault, endangering the welfare of a child, reckless endangering, and conspiracy for this particular incident. In the video, which police have deemed evidence and are not showing to the public, they claim that one child can clearly be heard crying and yelling, "He's pinching me," as one of the daycare workers responds, egging on the antagonist, "No pinching, only punching." Dover Police Captain Tim Stump said, quote, "Clearly one of the children is crying and does not want to continue on, and he is pushed back into the fray by one of the adults," end quote. You will be relieved but not surprised to know that Hands of Our Future Daycare, which is located at 868 South State Street in Dover, Delaware, has had its business license suspended, pending a hearing about this particular event, and the Dover Police Department arranged a meeting for parents and guardians of the daycare's children to answer their questions and help find these parents new daycare arrangements. I do not envy the task of whatever lawyer ends up getting saddled with trying to create a defense for these three indefensible and reprehensible people. Not only did their employer trust them to an extent, but so too did parents, perhaps even unwittingly, place the care of their little ones with these three careless, reckless individuals. They are the opposite of caregivers. They are the polar opposite, as a matter of fact. If caregivers resided in the Hall of Justice, these three would be in the Hall of Doom. They would come out of a swamp. And even that is really not enough. If it were up to me, they would reside in jail. Their actions here are absolutely detestable, and no punishment, no matter what any court comes up with, in my opinion, will ever be severe enough for these three. And that ended up turning into
Mike's Rant!
As a parent, I keep all manner of digital photos, home movies, and other important documents that have basically followed my son since birth up until right now, and all of these things I save on my computer. As a podcaster, I keep an enormous amount of media that is always changing right on my desktop, so I have constant access to it. And in my capacity as executive vice treasurer of Grizzly Productions, I also have my hands on some very sensitive documents and important material relating to that as well. And if all of a sudden all of that and everything else in my digital life were to disappear, I think I would scream and pull my hair out. Luckily, I don't have to fear this at all, because right next to my computer, I run the Drobo FS. It's a series of redundant drives that make sure that in the event my computer would fail and the hard drive's information would be lost, I'm still safe, because all that information is stored redundantly across all the drives inside my Drobo. And it would take some astronomical event for not only my hard drive, but the four drives in my Drobo FS to fail simultaneously. Why, it's almost unheard of. I've got a better chance of hitting the Powerball, I think. I'm safe because of my Drobo, and you can keep your digital life safe as well. Whether you're a professional that has needs for something as high as even a 12-bay Drobo with 4-terabyte drives in every single bay, or something more modest for your own personal usage, there is a storage solution for you. Browse around at great show sponsor and friend of ours, Drobo.com. Their website, I guarantee, has something to protect your digital life. Since I'm already feeling salty and this program never proceeds with a pretense of being unbiased journalism, let me now explore a story for which I have a bias. You may know Madison Maddie Verst. She's best known to viewers of the TLC show Toddlers and Tiaras as the 6-year-old girl that dressed up as Dolly Parton. This included even wearing a costume with padded breasts, and this performance eventually landed her on the front cover of People magazine tagged "Gone Too Far." Well, that's exactly the question a judge in Campbell County, Kentucky, is now trying to answer in a custody battle between Maddie's parents, Lindsay Jackson, and Bill Verst. Jackson alleges that Verst is attempting to use her decision to place their daughter in pageants as a way to gain full custody of their daughter. Quote, "While some people may or may not agree with pageants, it's not illegal," Jackson said. "I shouldn't be at risk of losing my child simply because she participates in a hobby that some people don't like." End quote. During a hearing this past Friday, the judge barred media from the courtroom, also played Jackson under a gag order, thank goodness for that. However, the judges also forbid Jackson to enter Maddie into any further pageants pending the outcome of this hearing, which resumes at the end of August. A court-appointed psychologist penned a lengthy piece of over 3,000 words condemning the decision to allow Maddie into these pageants, citing the Dolly Parton costume and another where she was dressed as a sexy police officer, as specific examples key to a recommendation to take away custodial rights. Now, the pageant industry has long been under public scrutiny for whether or not it contributes to the sexualization of children, and I think all you really need to do is watch a show like this for about 90 seconds, and I feel like you will most likely share my increasing sense of dread and sliminess, as all decent people would, because at the end of the day, I don't see any benefit to the child here whatsoever. This is being done by a parent that is either trying to exploit a child for money or is trying to live vicariously through the child. And if someone out there can elucidate for me a point upon which a child really benefits from being in these pageants, I'd love to hear it, because I happen to think it's a bunch of crap. An opinion piece published on the New York Times website, nytimes.com, by Bronwyn Ruska, whose name I most certainly just mispronounced, really struck a chord with me. It's entitled "Raising the Ritalin Generation." And this, in particular, deals with the author's son, Will, who, at the age of 8, it was advised, should begin a regimen of a generic alternative to Ritalin. It was suggested, because of his inability to focus during certain classes, that he needed to be evaluated and then medicated. Parents who are, of course, concerned that their kids might fall through the cracks oftentimes go through this process. What they come to discover is that, generally speaking, attention deficit has emerged as a go-to diagnosis. In fact, diagnosing attention deficit type disorders has increased, on average, 5.5% a year between 2003 and 2007. So in that period of time, 22% rise in diagnoses of this. That's according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, which you'll remember was the antagonist in a subplot on The X-Files. As of 2010, according to the National Health Interview Survey, 5.2 million children between the ages of 3 and 17 have been given diagnoses of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. That's ADHD, as they call it on the streets. The author found, after making an appointment with a psychiatrist where they filled out an extensive questionnaire and did interviews, as well as had some questionnaires filled out by her son's teachers, they assessed things like squirminess. And a lot of these diagnoses simply hinged on the teacher's responses. A lot of this seemed really quite subjective, and I think that that's very, very valid here. And another thing to be considered are the side effects of things like this. Now, even though this was a generic form of Ritalin, it shares a lot of the same side effects. And as I've mentioned before here on Daddy on Board, and I believe this remains the case to this day, there are no long-term research, there's no long-term research or studies about the effects of this on a maturing brain, these types of drugs. The list of side effects, for example, for Ritalin, and this methylphenidate, I guess is the name of the generic alternative, include difficulty sleeping, dizziness, vomiting, loss of appetite, diarrhea, headache, numbness, irregular heartbeat, difficulty breathing, which is key to life, fever, hives, seizures, agitation, motor or verbal tics, and depression. It can slow a child's growth, and it can also spurn weight gain. Most disturbing, it can cause sudden death in children with heart defects or serious heart problems. In the piece, somewhat reluctantly, the author does admit that they began to do a regimen of Ritalin and saw improved results in school. However, it was clear that Bronwyn really expressed some regret over the need to medicate her 8-year-old boy, who she felt just exhibited typical 8-year-old energy. I don't doubt that this is a difficult decision for parents to make. And before you do, if you're being pressured to do so, whether it's from school administrators or family friends or relatives or whatever, just make sure you get all the facts and try to make the very best decision you can as it relates to your child, who is unlike any others. The case is always unique. Last but not least, I have this story spurned from a new study that was published claiming that mothers who work full-time may be healthier at age 40 than their counterparts who stay at home, work part-time, or go through periods of unemployment. These researchers looked at long-term data on over 2,500 women who had children between the years 1978 and 1995, and they discovered from self-reported surveys that women who went back to full-time work soon after having a baby had better mental and physical health overall, reporting benefits such as more energy and less depression, which seems good. These numbers continue to hold true even after adjusting for factors like previous health conditions, single motherhood, and employment history before the pregnancy. Now, the why of this may have to do with what work offers women, and we're not just talking health insurance here. Quote, "Work is good for your health, both mentally and physically," said co-author of the report, Adrienne Freck, in a news release. Quote, "It gives women a sense of purpose, self-efficacy, control, and autonomy. They have a place where they are an expert on something, and they're paid a wage," end quote. Now, although the information may energize the working moms versus non-working moms argument, the authors of this research say that they had no interest in that. Instead, they just want women to know that getting an education and building a career are not frivolous pursuits. Which I guess if this was published in the 1950s, maybe that'd really be something. I don't know that there are a lot of women that think having an education and building a career are frivolous, but if you're out there, I want you to know this. There are not enough smart people in the world. I know this because on the brief occasions I go out into the world, I'm always confronted by dumb people, and I would much rather that they be replaced with smart people, even if those smart people are female, and it would make everything a whole lot better. It's not frivolous. I can't imagine that people think that. Anyway, yeah, there's that. For just a little while longer, you can save a lot of money on some incredible electronic gizmos made by my pals and great show sponsors, Cobra Electronics. Here's how you can find out what's up. Go to Cobra.com. On that left-hand navigation, you're going to see a section called Specials. And going on right now for a limited time in the Specials section, they're offering buy one, get one free on the ingenious two-way locator system, the Cobra Tag. You can make sure that your college-bound student never misplaces any of their valuables. They put that Cobra Tag right onto their laptop bag, their backpack, their keys, whatever you want. And then, because it pars right through their smartphone, they can ring the misplaced item. Or if they're too far out of range, it'll even generate a map to lead you right to where you misplaced that item. They're buy one, get one free for a limited time only. Go over and see everything relating to the Cobra Tag. And their other great innovation, the Cobra iRadar, has also been reduced in price. In fact, they've got a $60 freebie they're giving away right now for people interested in picking up the Cobra iRadar for radar, laser, and safety camera detection. It works with your iPhone or iPod Touch. You can find out more about that over at Cobra.com. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. If you need two-way walkie-talkies, even up to a 20-mile radius radio like that, They are great discounts going on right now, and just for a little while longer, in the specials section at Cobra.com. Get over there, save yourself some bucks, and pick up something cool. I will conclude this 101st episode of Daddy on Board by reading some things you dropped off on our Facebook fan page. You can also tweet them to @TheDaddyOnBoard or drop them off on Google Plus if you so desire. Some bits of parenting wisdom dropped off on Facebook for me came from, among others, Libby Denny, who writes, "My mom's trick, she found something she could bond over with each of her four kids. With one brother, it was reading Westerns and drawing. The other brother, music, especially the guitar and Elvis. My sister, cooking. Me, oldies albums and reading mysteries. We always had something that was just between the two of us. At 40, I realize how tough that must have been. She's the best. Thanks for dropping that off, Libby." Also, Joan Dawson Hune, whose name I may or may not have pronounced correctly, wrote this: "Try to anticipate issues and bring along distractions. Also, don't make your outings last too long. This sounds like sound parenting advice from an experienced vet of the parentosphere." Thank you, Joan. Also, Susan Lucas-Cazenas, whose name I'm almost certain I just butchered, writes, "Make getting good grades their job. Let them earn money from their grades, because they will earn more in scholarship money from grades than they would working a part-time job." And that seems like a very good idea, especially if you have any idea what college education costs these days. Thank you for dropping that off, Susan. So sorry about your surname. I've also got a little victory for you that was dropped off by Gary Judy. Wrote this: "My son Philip is 3. He's a great kid, but he's at that stage where I need to lay out his expectations exactly, or he will destroy all in his path." I can relate to you already, Gary Judy. His first 2 weeks of his new Sunday school class, for example, he caused skirmishes and basically laid kids out. It's okay to defend yourself, but not to tackle Jimmy because he looked at you funny or used a certain toy. He is now at the stage where he is great in class, according to his teachers. He gives me a report after every class of what he learned, the fact that he didn't hit any kids, and the status of how well he listened to the teacher. He even does reports now for his other daily activities and gives me the rundown after work. I listened to Mom, or I didn't listen to Mom, etc. He is very truthful, and I appreciate his honesty and efforts to improve." And that is no little victory, Gary. That is a big victory. So well done. We'll even bring in that post-production sound effect. Little victories. Well done, Gary. Thanks for sending that in. And to everyone who sent me something. So sorry about your last names. You know, when I'm not here, I'm often over on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe podcast. I do team up with Clayton Morris over there. It tends to come out Tuesdays or Wednesdays. We talk about pop culture. We rant a lot. All that and more awaits you on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. Over the weekends, typically Sundays, I publish the trending show with Natalie Morris. I'll keep you up to date on everything going on in the world of Google search and Twitter trends, thanks to Natalie. And of course, I'd love if you'd come see me live. I am next in action in the biggest professional wrestling tournament of all time, September 14th, 15th, and 16th at the Palmer Center in Easton, Pennsylvania. It is the 6th annual King of Trios, where I will team with my tag team partner and protege Jigsaw and the greatest female professional wrestler of all time, Manami Toyota, against 15 other trios, including teams representing the WWF, ECW, Osaka Pro, Sendai Girls, JWP, Ring of Honor, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Find out more at kingoftrios.com. I look forward to seeing you there. And if not, well, I won't even know yet, because I will be back before then with another podcast that, unless I take the week off, I will call Daddy on Board 102. Adios, amigos.